Welcome to Jaguars Monday, with Gene Smith. Join Jaguars General Manager Gene Smith and your host Cole Pepper as they break down the last Jaguars game and look at the next time the Jaguars take the field. We'll also take a dip inside the Gene Pool to see what makes a player stand out at his position. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith is brought to you by Baptist Health, Ticket Exchange, Wells Fargo, Sonny's Barbecue, your local Jacksonville Teal Deals merchants, and by Everbank. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith begins right now.
And we welcome you in here on a Monday night, Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith, live from Jaguar Central. Cole Pepper here along with the general manager. A lot to discuss today following the Jaguars' 17-13 loss to the Steelers. Now a five-game losing streak, and as we have done, I do have some positives I want to get into because, hey, the negatives are easy when you're in a five-game losing streak. But before we get into that, your overall takeaway from yesterday's game?
Well, obviously the second half, there were a number of positive things that occurred, specifically on the defensive side of the ball, where they shut them out in the second half and gave up 55 total yards. I mean, that is a complete flip from the first half. Offensively, there were some things, Cole, that I thought were positive when you talk about a 17-play touchdown drive. Yeah. And then no turnovers. We did run the ball for 4.4 average. Per carry. In the kicking game, we did a good job against a good returner for the Pittsburgh Steelers, Antonio Brown. And I thought there were some better blocking situations on returns, and certainly Josh Scobie hit a couple nice field goals. So there were some bright spots. There just were not enough of them to enable us to win on the road yesterday.
One of the things that really stood out to me in this was what you mentioned, the second half performance, and not just that the productivity was better and so forth, but a team in the midst of a losing streak with everything against them and having played a poor first half, probably fortunate to just be down 17, very easily could have packed it in. And it struck me that one of the things that you've talked about, you know, with the character being a strong part of what you're going after, that's where character is not just about a guy not getting in trouble off the field. It's about how he responds to tough situations like that.
No question. And last week in practice, there was tremendous spirit out on the practice field. Guys enjoying what they're doing and who they're doing it with. And I really believe that if we can get ourselves a win and we can stack some wins, you'll see some momentum with this football team. And thank goodness the way our division is playing out to this point in the season, we're still in the hunt with a 1-5 record. And so there's plenty of things that we can accomplish as the season goes on. And the NFL season is a marathon, and we're still in the run.
Now, Marco Coleman made the prediction on opening day. He thought that 7-9 would win the AFC South, looking at it. And it may. I mean, we saw a playoff team at 7-9 last. So the conventional wisdom of, you know, 10, 11 wins may not apply to the AFC South this year. So you get a break as far as that's concerned. Couple other top boy, Paul Posluszny, 19 tackles. It was 16, and then they went back and looked at the tape. 19 tackles. I'm thinking back in my memory banks. It's been a long time since a Jaguars player had that kind of Darryl Smith's had a couple of big days too. But boy, seemed like Posluszny was getting off the bottom of the pile every time that you looked up. He was there making a play.
He was all over the field. I know he went back home, in essence. He had a lot of family there. But Paul is that way in practice in terms of going full tilt every play, every day. And it certainly transferred to the field yesterday. And he's a guy who has come in and I think earned his the respect of his teammates, because he certainly had a good reputation coming out of college and in the NFL before he came here. But He's done it in a very quiet manner thus far.
And he has, I guess, taken that role of being the quarterback of the huddle, as a middle linebacker is often. But some of the defensive play, Terrence Knighton was talking about this last week, about how there's no doubt he's in charge of the huddle when you're in there. He's got that kind of presence and that kind of respect from some of the other players. Before the game, a couple hours before the game, word came down that Evan Britton wasn't going to be able to go. Back locked up. He's had some ongoing back issues. And that forced Cameron Bradfield in for his first activity. Undrafted rookie, a guy who I think we noticed in training camps, you know, that guy looks better than an undrafted rookie, and went in there with no kind of heads up other than maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours. Hey, you're going to start today against the Steelers. Good luck. How do you think he did?
Well, I thought he played good for the situation he was put in. But it doesn't surprise people that have had the opportunity to see him since he's arrived in Jacksonville. Here's a guy that all he does is block his guy. He was certainly capable of playing in an NFL game based on how he was practicing against our defensive linemen. I think if you asked any one of our defensive linemen who had a chance to go against him on a daily basis, they know what he's capable of. I mean, he's got rare genetics. I don't say that very often, but here's a guy that's 6'4 and a half, 310 pounds, that runs 4.8. He's intelligent. He's a dominant player at a Division II quality football program. I think he's got a tremendous future because he's willing to work at it, and he takes pride in his performance.
Yeah, certainly didn't look I know you can always find ways to play better, but he didn't look like a guy who was out of his class being out there. And you, a lot of folks say, well, geez, here's an undrafted rookie from a Division II school going against the Steelers on the road. You're going to look like a duck out of water, but that wasn't the case.
That wasn't the case. You know, we did a lot of work on him in the spring. I'm glad it worked out where he chose to come to Jacksonville as an undrafted free agent. But when you see him stand out there on the sidelines, he looks like an NFL lineman. Mm-hmm. And we've played him everywhere except for center. So he's done a good job of mastering the technique involved in playing left tackle, because you're usually matched up with your best pass rusher. And I know yesterday Harrison didn't play. They put Timmons out there. And Woodley was on the other side. But in the opportunities that he had in the run game and in pass pro, for the most part, he did a good job.
All right. Still to come, we'll talk about some of the defensive issues in the first half and talk about a turn of events from the first half to the second, a major change there. Some of the moves that were made late in the ball game and how that impacted what went on. And we'll also talk about what's coming next for the Jaguars is the Monday night game a week from tonight. Jaguars will be on Monday Night Football against the Ravens. If you're a parent or guardian of a girl 6 to 17 years of age, stop by your local Bell store and register your child to become a member of the Junior Roar, performing at halftime during the Jaguars-Bucks game December 11th. Registration is now through November 6th. For official rules, visit your nearby Bell store. Also, if you want to get in your pick as the Scout's Eye Unsung Player of the Week, you can tweet it to me at Cole Pepper. You can go online at facebook.com/JacksonvilleJaguars and enter it there. And whoever picks the guy who the GM says played deserving of recognition, but maybe not the highlight plays, will be the winner. And of all the correct picks, we'll draw names out of a hat, and you'll get an autographed football, autographed by the GM and the player. And you'll get to hear the Scout's Eye cry at you from high above. More Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith coming up right after this timeout here on Jaguars Radio.
Ball at the 18-yard line. Kareem Malone set back. Two receivers set to the left. A tight end outside each tackle. Gabbert drops to throw. Good protection. Now turns and throws the ball. And this one is caught. Jason Hill. Touchdown.
One of the touchdowns from yesterday's Jaguars game. Blaine Gabbert hooking up with Jason Hill for the second time in his young career. We welcome you back. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. Nobody helps you get ready for game day better than Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and more. Stop by Gate today. All right, time for an injury update brought to you by Baptist Health, Jacksonville's Circle of Care. The injury update with the Doctor Who theme. We've got Aaron Campman back returning yesterday. Played, I think, 16 snaps, something like that, 12 or 16, something around that range, and was in on a play. Probably, I'll take some of the blame on this one, too. I think a lot of us kind of were looking, all right, let's see what it is that he'll do, that Campman would do back. Is he going to look like the old Campman? That's probably an unrealistic thing first game back, but he did get back on the field. Eugene Monroe, it's a wait-and-see situation with his stinger. Evan Britton with his back. And then Rod Isaac, a hammy coming out of the game yesterday. And those will all be reassessed between now and Thursday will be the first time we'll get word on that from the head coach because of the Monday night game, an extra day to heal up, and that should help out a little bit. We'll talk a little bit more about the upcoming game in just a bit. That's your injury update brought to you by Baptist Health Jacksonville Circle of Care. All right, late in the and by the way, continue getting your Scouts Eye picks in via Twitter at Cole Pepper, and also you can get them in on Facebook.com/Jacksonville Jaguars. A lot of different guesses, picks, choices here. I didn't get it this week. I don't know who it is, but I know the guys I threw out there didn't get it. So we'll see who emerges this time around. Anytime you have a close game, late decisions get put right in the spotlight. And so that fourth down situation with 4:18 left, where Jaguars lined up to go for it on fourth and six, and then call a timeout, think the better of it, send Josh Scobie out, and he kicks the field goal. Thoughts on that play, and was that a key play in the game in your mind?
Well, it was a key play. I think from a coaching standpoint, you're on the sideline, and you feel the energy of your team, their team. It's a gut call, I think, in that particular situation, based on how you feel maybe you're wearing down the other team. It's just like when you go into a situation late in the game, where do you go for the win, do you go for the tie? A lot of that has to do with everything leading up until that point. And so I think you have situations like that in games, and it's a head coach's call, and he's got to go with his gut on it.
And if you think about it from a, was it the right call standpoint, the things that would go into making that decision are, how's the defense playing? How's their offense playing? What's the likelihood of stopping them and getting the ball back and having some time to do something with it? And it very nearly worked out perfectly in terms of the defense. Roethlisberger basically, if he falls back, he doesn't get the first down. He falls forward, he does get the first down. Obviously, he falls forward a lot. That's as a big guy as he is. Jaguars are very close to getting the ball back on a three and out in that situation. And then, as it turned out, that was the only first down of the second half, by the way, for the Steelers. Jaguars then get it back and just, at that point didn't have enough time to make the, had one shot at the end zone, that was it, rather than if they would have stopped them earlier, maybe would have had two, three more plays to get it done. But if you want to say from that standpoint, it's the right decision because it wasn't that you gave the ball away after you kicked it and then never got the ball back. Jaguars did get the ball back.
Right, and I think you expressed it well. That's what I'm talking about. When you're in the moment of the game itself, you're looking at a lot of different things. Your timeouts, the amount of time, how you're playing, how they're playing. There's a lot of factors, and it's got to be a gut call based on your sense on the sidelines as the head coach. And, again, it doesn't ever come down to one play, one player. It's a team sport. There's a lot of plays through the course of the ball game that could have went a different way. And certainly you'd like to have a lot of them back, but you can't. And we do have to execute better to be able to win a football game here. And hopefully that'll come sooner than later.
It looked like in the first half, you hear the phrase getting stuck on blocks. Looked like that was happening an awful lot in the first half with the defense, where Steelers would get into a guy and that would be it. Didn't happen in the second half. What happens to make that kind of a change? I don't think there was a drastic change in strategy or game plan. It looks like guys just played a lot better in the second half than they did in the first. Is that accurate?
I think that's accurate.
How do you flip the switch, I guess? Maybe that's the $64,000 question. If you could always flip the switch, you'd be in pretty good shape.
I don't know what it was to start the game. It was a situation where we just didn't look the same. And then we got into our groove, and certainly when you're able to go from one half of football where we gave up some yards that was uncharacteristic of our defense, especially the rushing yards, and then come back in the second half and almost completely shut them down. I can't give you a clear answer on that, Cole, but I think it's an excellent question. That's the human element of football.
You know, the other question that I've gotten a lot from folks last on a post game and today around town and via email and Twitter and so forth about Maurice Jones-Drew's the rotation being utilized there. And it seems you get it. You don't want to use him through it with everything, but what are the decision-making processes that are utilized in terms of when to have Mojo in there and when to give him a rest?
Well, again, it's the coaching staff coming up with how to best utilize him in certain personnel packages and certain situations in the game. And, again, if you're on the sideline and you know the flow of the game and how to utilize the player best in certain situations, you have to trust that that he's going to be utilized the right way as the plan going into the game spelled out. So that's what I have to trust. That's what you have to trust. That's what the fans have to trust. I like the way he ran yesterday. Mm-hmm. There were situations where he was able to create some, certainly on his own, because we didn't block him all of the time, and that's typical in most games. But he gave the Jaguars his very best yesterday trying to help us win a football game.
And continues to be among the league's leading rushers as well. Another popular question I've gotten from several different folks wanting to know about Brandon Lloyd. He was traded today from the Denver Broncos to the St. Louis Rams for a conditional pick. It's being reported, a fifth or sixth round pick. Do the Jaguars have any interest in getting involved in that trade talk?
Well, what I do, and I do it year-round, and obviously the trade deadline was tomorrow at 4 o'clock, is I do my research as well as our pro staff. We've got work on them coming out of college by our college scouts, and after doing all of our research and processing the player fully, decisions are made. And we did our work on him, and obviously he's a Ram now, and certainly they feel like with Josh Daniels there, he had him in Denver a year ago, that he can utilize him basically in the same way.
And then as a result of that move, Mike Sims Walker, the former Jaguar, gets let go, and a lot of folks are asking, the Jaguars have interest in bringing Mike back.
Well, we drafted Mike here, and we will process him, like I said, with every player that becomes available.
You've got a pretty good idea about him, though, at this point. I mean, the move was only made, not all that long ago. You've got a good idea about what you don't need to do a whole lot of new work on.
No, but you always do follow-up work, mm-hmm. Because he was released. They had a situation there where the guy he was playing behind got hurt, Mike got a chance to play, and it's unfortunate that he was released. I mean, they have a trying situation where they're trying to win football games, and he's no longer a Ram. So I always do additional work once a player leaves our situation and moves on to another one.
All right, time now for the answer you've been waiting for, the Scout's Eye Unsung Player of the Game. Who was it this week?
Josh Scobie.
Okay. All right. A little change up on us.
Yeah, Josh, he had a 46 and a 45-yard field goal. There was some wind. Not as much wind, though, as the Utah Pitt game day before.
Yeah.
His kickoffs.
And did you scout that game? Were you up there for that game as well?
I was. Yeah. His kickoffs, were over 4 hang time and 75-yard average. So when you look at that, and then a new holder, Nick Harris came in and did a nice job holding on the extra point field goals, and taking all that into consideration in the season that Josh is having, he's certainly deserving of this honor, being named the unsung performer for the Pittsburgh game.
A high honor, no doubt. And he'll have the honor of signing a football right next to your name this week. So congratulations to Josh Scobie and anybody who picked out Josh Scobie as the Scout's Eye pick. We'll have to go through and see if anybody got that one. Like a little bit of a change-up going with the special teams, going with the kicker.
Well, he did have a squib, you know, yeah, at the end, but we didn't count the squib. That was obviously something that was necessary to do, but the rest of his kicks were good. And like I said, the way he's come out of the gate here, he's done a nice job of sustaining his performance.
All right, we'll take time out, come back, and talk a little bit more about yesterday's ball game and the state of things. Also, some news on a former Jaguars quarterback and how things stand in terms of the AFC South. Plus, still to come as well, we'll take a look at the Baltimore Ravens, who the Jaguars will entertain a week from today. Plus, right around the corner, time to dip into the gene pool. We'll talk about the fullback position, what it takes to be successful as a fullback. Fans, just text BBQ to 72239 and enter for a chance to win the Sunday's Game Ball Delivery Contest. You can hand the game ball to the ref at the start of the next Jaguars home game. Back with more Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith right after this timeout here on Jaguars Radio.
From their own 37, there's the shotgun. Snap pressure coming, and Roethlisberger's hit! The ball's free on the field! And the Steelers cover it up. Second sack of the ball game for the Jaguars on Ben Roethlisberger in his many tries.
John Chick just flat out beat Matt Starks with speed and comes from behind with the tomahawk chop and knocks the ball out, his second sack of the season.
One of the big plays for the Jaguars defense in the second half yesterday. 17-13 loss in Pittsburgh. Welcome back. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith continues. Become a part of the Jaguars Advantage, the new Jaguars fan loyalty program. With Jaguars Advantage, season ticket owners can earn up to 15% cash back at hundreds of their favorite online retailers. For more information, go to jaguarsadvantage.com. All right, let's jump into the gene pool and examine the very DNA of a position. And this week, Gene, we're talking about the fullback position. And here's mine, 6 foot, 240, 4.75 in the 40. What do you have on average size, height, speed?
Well, this matches up. The guy's coming out of the combine with pro starters, 6001, 245. The 40 time is 489 coming out this year in the draft, and 480 in the NFL, like I said, of the starters. So it's in line with really what you had. And it's a position that, I don't want to say it's a dying breed. I mean, there's still a number of fullbacks on rosters around the NFL, although there's some teams now that are using like a move tight end in that role, like you saw the Pittsburgh Steelers utilizing number 85 Johnson in that role yesterday. But, you know, the conventional fullback is more the Greg Jones type, you know, a guy that can dig a linebacker out of the hole. Certainly if you're more of a West Coast offense, you know, running and catching is more important for the fullback. But with what we do out of our two-back set stuff in particular, we're looking for a guy like Greg Jones. And Greg was 6012. He's 252, and he ran 4.69 coming out. And you're going to see a guy this weekend that's a lot like Greg, Vonta Leach. Mm-hmm. He's a conventional fullback. He's 5'11", 5", 255, and he ran 4.86. So you're going to see two of the most physical fullbacks, you know, playing this weekend in the same game.
If there's a guy who is put together better than Greg Jones in the league, I don't know who it is. I mean, body fat got to be way down, muscles on top of muscles and everything else. And one of the remarkable things about him, as we were talking about fullbacks, is he was not a fullback in college. Vonta Leach was a fullback in college, and I think may have played some tight end earlier in his college career. But Greg Jones was a feature back. He made that transition from being a feature back to being a fullback. I mean, you go from one of the glamour position with the ball in your hands guys to one of the guys who's got to do all the dirty work.
No question. And Greg was a highly recruited linebacker, mm-hmm, out of high school, Beaufort, South Carolina. And Greg's arms are probably bigger than my thighs.
Yeah.
Greg, you know, body slammed Lamar Woodley this past weekend. that's one guy that I wouldn't mess with. You know, Lamar Woodley's about 265 pounds, and he's a competitor just like Greg is. And for him to torque him, I tell you, he's got tremendous strength in his hips, and it shows up at the point of attack in the run game.
All right, so those are some of the measurables. We talked about some of the non-measurables, the personality types you want. How about who's the best? Who's the best fullback, whether it's in the game now, that you've ever scouted, that you who has ever played, who's your best this week?
Well, again, I'm biased to Greg Jones on the blocking aspect because for what we need our fullback to do, you know, he's leading certainly an all-pro running back in Maurice Jones-Drew. Now, the interesting thing is Ray Rice is a lot like Maurice Jones-Drew, same type of runner with the balance, has some violence to him, can catch the ball in the backfield. And so both of these running backs who are elite players have fullbacks that can lead up into the hole for them. And, you know, Greg can catch the ball. He certainly has some run skills. But I would say for what we have in Greg Jones and what they have in Vonta Leach, they're two of the better blocking fullbacks. Now, if you look at the NFL through the years, if I go back to my Cleveland Brown, you know, what my dad used to talk about in up in our area was Jim Brown and Marion Motley.
People don't remember. They think of Jim Brown, he must have been a tailback. And the game has evolved a bit, but he was a fullback.
He was a fullback, and so was Marion Motley. And back then they got the ball more than they get today because obviously fullback today blocks more. Down here people would know Larry Zonka from the Dolphins. I put two other guys down, Mike Allstott and Darryl Johnston, because I thought in recent years, although they're not playing in the NFL right now, they're you know certainly players that people would recognize because they were both complete. You know, they could block, they certainly could catch, and they could run. So those would be the guys that I would say at that particular position that were elite at what they did.
Yeah, and so that is the fullback. Those are the details on the gene pool this week. And next week, we look at the guard position. We'll break down guards next week. All right. A little more here. Let's get some comments and questions in from some more folks who are chiming in via Twitter and also via Facebook.com/JacksonvilleJaguars.
Yeah, I got one here from Facebook, by the way, our social media question, sponsored by our good friends at CopyFacts. Gene, this is a three-part question from Doug. Says John Chick made a couple of nice plays. How many snaps did he get? How did he grade out? And can he be an every down player in the future?
Well, he played in our sub package, and he's got outstanding snap anticipation, which is what you'll see in Suggs this weekend. If you have that, you got a chance to get on the edge of the block quickly. And he's got tremendous energy, and he's got the ability to bend the corner instead of round the corner. So I think his snaps will continue to increase, and I think in time there's a chance that he could become an every-down guy. I think right now the role that he's in is probably his best fit to maximize what he brings to the table as a new player on a roster.
High energy guy for sure, though. I mean, he's got that kind of cut from the same cloth as, you know, Mincy and Campman and guy who just – there was one play where he had pressure and I think kind of got his feet knocked out and was just – he was crawling. He was, you know, like a I think I used the phrase like a caged animal being unleashed. He was crawling his way out there trying to get to the quarterback late in the game.
No question. Here's a guy that he is married. He's got four children and one on the way. So he's trying to feed a lot of mouths.
He's hungry, yeah.
Right. And, you know, he's had to come into the NFL kind of the Paul Spicer way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Paul persevered. NFL Europe, the CFL, this guy, you know, started out in NFL camp, ended up in the CFL, and back down in the NFL in a practice squad. And, you know, he's one of those guys that will never take what's great for granted. He prepares to be his very best, and what he has, he'll give you every single day. And so I'm so happy for him and what he's done since he became a Jaguar.
All right, one other question that we've gotten, you know, a few times here as the as things have gone on. You mentioned earlier the trade deadline. Any thought on making a trade before the deadline? You think you do anticipate any kind of trade happening?
I don't anticipate it. We again do a lot of work on research and studying rosters, and you know, we're always willing to listen on any consideration, but to this point nothing has developed.
All right, that is the word on the trade deadline, which comes up tomorrow at 4 o'clock. When we come back, we'll talk about the matchup coming up against the Ravens, look around the AFC South, and also little bit of work coverage. I know a lot of fans like the National Pub, and Jags did get a positive bit of National Pub this week. We'll talk about that when we come back. This is Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith right here on Jaguars Radio. Another sack by the Jaguars defense yesterday in the 17-13 loss to the Steelers. Again, the Jaguars defense gave up just 55 second-half yards after giving up big chunks in the first half. Things got solved after halftime, but too little too late in a loss to the Steelers. This is Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. And your staff got a nice little write-up. CBSSports.com, Rob Rang, who's one of the vaunted draft analysts, and there are a lot of them out there, talking about the – this was not his own idea, but I went to five different personnel people, five talent evaluators ranging from area scouts to general managers. They were asked to ignore the team's overall record, thoughts on the coaching staff and their assessment, instead focus on reliability, longevity, consistency of the scouting department. And they were anonymous with this, but Jaguars were mentioned in the top five, along with the Giants, Steelers, Ravens, and Packers. Pretty good company.
Well, I mean, it's humbling. Certainly when you're sitting here 1-5, that's a nice positive to compliment the staff that I work with. I got some tremendous people that I work with every day, starting with Dana DeJarle, my administrative assistant. I'm very, very, very blessed. And the other four scouting staffs, I think it's very accurate. The one thing, if you look at all of them, there's continuity. There's experience. I think there's integrity. So, I think it's, you know, goes to the scouts, Terry McDonough and every scout in our department.
All right, so there is list of a top five you want to be on for sure. All right, David Garrard, by the way, having back surgery. And so the word coming out on this is that he's going to be done for 4 to 6 weeks. Of course, a lot of attention paid with Jason Campbell going down and with the Raiders reaching out and trying to see and trying to find who they would sign up. And so it looks like it'll be at least that long as far as David is concerned. And I was just reading a little blog entry by Tanya Ganguly from the Times Union, who had talked to David about it, said it was causing him leg problems. He thought it was a different thing than the back. So, again, compounding, and just kind of shows you the kind of pounding that you take playing this game year after year. And so the former Jaguar quarterback, of course, we wish him a speedy recovery, but likelihood would be that he wouldn't be ready to go here this year, so we may be looking at an off-season situation for David. All right, AFC South, here's how it looks. You mentioned it earlier. The division has not been very good this year. Colts are winless. Lost to Cincinnati 27-17. They're 0-6 now. Titans had their bye week and actually gained ground with the bye because Houston lost to Baltimore 29-14. Houston's struggling now suddenly. They're 3-3. Jaguars are 1-5. And to have a team at 1-5 and to say, geez, you still have a chance, you would come on. But I mean, just looking at the math, there's no day. Get things turned around, win some of these close games that the Jaguars are losing, and it's not going to take 12 or 13 wins to win this division. It may not take 8 wins to win this division at the rate it's going.
No, we just got to take each game one at a time and we got to try to get another win here. And we're capable of doing that. We just, again, have to execute at a higher level. And once that happens, you'll be amazed with the confidence and momentum that can come from one win, and then you stack another win. But we just have to start with getting our second win. That's the key here.
All right, so we'll do this every week, and usually we'll do it earlier, but some other things that we wanted to talk about first. Do want to talk about Blaine Gabbert and his play. We touched a little bit on the fact that he didn't throw an interception. Turnovers haven't been a problem for him as a rookie. Where did you see progress made by Blaine Gabbert yesterday?
Well, it's tough in a loss. You know, he does some things very natural, like the throw to Jason Hill for the touchdown. He made it look like it was an easy throw. That was a difficult throw. I think the one area he can improve is his footwork. I mean, footwork is a foundation for accuracy. He does have, outstanding anticipation at times, and that's something that's key to being a great quarterback. And I think in time, as he continues to grow and the things start happening even better around him, you'll see him become who he's capable of.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the Ravens, which is another top-flight defense, maybe the best defense that, you know, top to bottom that Blaine will have seen here in his young career. He's seen some good ones, good defenses and good defensive minds. What do you anticipate a week from tonight against the Ravens?
Well, I mean, he's going to see a couple future Hall of Fame players at the second and third level of their defense. Because obviously, Ray Lewis and Ed Reed are tremendous players with instinct and awareness. And then Nagata inside, I mean, he's a tremendous player. You know, you look at him and Sue as probably the two best forces inside right now in the NFL.
Different styles between the two of them, though. You compare Sue to Haloti.
Yeah, different schemes, too, and how they're utilized. And then you got Suggs on the edge. I mean, yeah. He's a guy that can create problems because, again, he's got tremendous snap anticipation, and he finds a way of getting around the quarterback a lot. So defensively, it's at every level a great challenge.
All right, so what's the key matchup? We like to look at a key matchup to watch during the game, and for folks who will either be watching on TV or be here at the stadium at Everbank Field to watch, what's the key matchup?
Well, like I said, you got Ray Rice and you got Maurice Jones-Drew, so you got two elite running backs. But I think from a fan's perspective, Greg Jones on Ray Lewis and certainly Vonta Leach on Paul Posluszny. Okay. Those would be the good matchups.
So you're talking fullback on middle linebacker for both the leading up those.
Well, because as a scout, again, I like to look at strength on strength, mm-hmm. You know, the contested matchups, and I think those would be enjoyable for the fans when they get the opportunity to do so.
All right, we'll keep a close eye on that on Monday night. So that means no Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith next Monday, though you'll hear from the GM when he's on with Brian Sexton in pregame. And so you and I will sit down again 2 weeks from today. Look forward to it.
Well, thank you very much, Cole and Joe, and again for all the fan support.
For the general manager, Gene Smith, for executive producer Joe Fortunato, Cole Pepper saying thanks for listening to Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith, and good night from Jaguar Central.